Well, good morning, and I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to this year's Minsky Conference. It is indeed a beautiful day, a beautiful setting, so I suspect that will facilitate important discussion today. I was intrigued by your agenda, and I know its evolution a little bit, having followed where you started last fall and where you've ended up, but I think the topics that have been identified for discussion at this event highlight a number of policy choices that face our nation today. And I think all of us understand that the implications of those choices are going to be far-reaching, whether they are to the main streets of a region that I serve or to the economies around the world. And so today, I want to talk about one of those policy choices, and that is central bank monetary policy, and particularly that of the Federal Reserve. Over the past 15 months, my colleagues and I have begun this process of gradually removing nearly a decade of accommodation. That accommodation came in the form of both conventional interest rate policy, which lowered short-term rates to near zero, and also a series of more unconventional policy actions, namely large-scale asset purchases and something we refer to as forward guidance. Those actions, as you know, have been both lauded and criticized. Indeed, if you go back to March of 2009, one member of the FOMC, Don Cohn, commented on the very difficult situation that the FOMC found itself in terms of determining an appropriate policy response at that time. And he said, "We're in a position where doing the right thing is not obvious." And so as I stand here today, if doing the right thing was not obvious at that time, I will tell you that the path to unwinding these extraordinary policy actions and returning to a more conventional policy approach is no less fraught with questions about the FOMC's decision-making framework. And of course, along with that are many questions. How will conventional and unconventional policy accommodation be removed? What are the implications of that? Is the process of normalizing policy today behind the curve? What linkages are there between the large balance sheet and any adjustments and interest rate policy? And what exactly is the right level of interest rates that best supports long-run price stability for our economy? Many questions. My remarks today, you'll be pleased to know, are not going to try to tackle all of those. But they're important questions. And so what I plan to do today is focus on the process of normalization, what some of its challenges are, particularly as it relates to unwinding the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Before I get into that, though, I want to begin with an economic backdrop, if you will, under which the FOMC is considering these policy adjustments. And of course, now would be a good time to remind you that these are my views that I express today and not those of others on the FOMC. For the most part, I think the economy looks to be on solid footing. That doesn't mean that it is performing necessarily the way we hoped we would want, the way it has in the past, but I think by most metrics, it's come a long way. Consumers are confident, they are spending, household balance sheets are in better shape, and house prices are rising. Employment has gained traction, which has brought the unemployment rate down to 4.5%. Business investment and productivity growth have been somewhat sluggish for most of this recovery, but we see, again, profitability coming back. The energy and manufacturing sectors also are bouncing back with the stabilization in oil prices and the value of the U.S. dollar. In general, the economy has come a very long way since the financial crisis that began nearly a decade ago. And I think particularly noteworthy is that it has weathered a number of shocks over the course of this lengthy expansion. Despite the apparent health of the economy, though, policymakers are always attentive to risk on the horizon. Today, however, there's a sense that outcomes could actually be better than expected rather than worse. For example, if you look at the FOMC's latest summary of economic projections, which are affectionately known as the dot plots, you'll see that more participants now see risk that real GDP growth and inflation could be higher than forecast rather than lower. This shift in risk assessment is in sharp contrast to the more pessimistic views that dominated past projections. And it has been this outlook that has encouraged the FOMC to continue the process of normalization. Let me talk a little bit about the dynamics, though, around the decision-making framework today. And I'm going to go back to how it looked before the crisis. So prior to that, the business of setting monetary policy involved relatively few moving parts. FOMC decisions could be steered with a fair amount of precision by the Federal Reserve's open market desk and with a relatively modest amount of intervention in financial markets. Obviously, there were other aspects to that process, but the tools and considerations were generally well understood and relatively straightforward. Today, conducting monetary policy is considerably more complicated, owing in part to the size and composition of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. If you look back just ahead of the financial crisis, you would see the Fed's balance sheet was slightly less than $1 trillion, and it was a portfolio of short-term treasuries. Over the period from 2009 to 2014, a series of large-scale asset purchases swelled that balance sheet to nearly $4.5 trillion, and the portfolio shifted to include mortgage-backed securities and long-term treasuries. These unprecedented actions were carefully considered at the time, and of course, the objective was to boost economic activity. Faced with the prospect of potential near-term benefits, in other words, what would we get by buying these assets, the analysis of the associated cost of doing so we found to be generally difficult to quantify and viewed to be well in the future, which perhaps made them easier to discount. As a voting member who dissented in 2013, I felt then that the cost outweighed the benefit in the longer run. The key challenge for monetary policy today is to unwind this large balance sheet in the least disruptive manner. It's an important step, and it's one that the FOMC anticipated going back as early as 2011 when it first established exit strategy principles and framed those for the public. Of course, after 2011, there were additional decisions to expand the balance sheet further, and so the FOMC revisited those exit strategy principles in 2014, and at that time outlined a different approach or an expanded approach to monetary policy normalization. The truth is, it is difficult to know with any degree of confidence just how the economy and financial markets will react once the FOMC announces and then takes steps to reduce its security holdings. And of course, there are a range of views about what that reaction could be. Some think the benefits of the actions that were taken to swell that balance sheet were only very modest ones. And as a result, the cost of the unwinding could also be of little consequence to the broader economy. Others think the effects were larger, and to the extent they were substantial, that the actions to reduce the size of that balance sheet will need to be taken with a great deal of care and caution. And there are others yet that think there's really no symmetry to how that balance sheet works, meaning any benefits gained from the balance sheet expansion are not likely to be reversed when it shrinks. There will be a lot of study of this issue. There will be consideration from various sources about the possible effects and how to proceed. But I think it's fair to say the implications to our economy are uncertain. The other complication here is that balance sheet actions have the potential to complicate interest rate policy, so moving that short-term interest rate. There's likely some trade-off between adjusting interest rates and shrinking the balance sheet, but again, the specifics of that trade-off are hard to quantify. This kind of uncertainty and this additional complexity, of course, raises the risk of policy errors, And we also understand it could spark about a financial market volatility. We need to accept that. Beyond the mechanics, though, of shrinking this large balance sheet, establishing a sound framework for the timing of when those adjustments will be made is going to be important. And of course, to that end, the FOMC discussed at its most recent meeting in March various aspects of what an appropriate decision-making framework might be to guide its actions. Balance sheet adjustments, in my own view, are going to need to be gradual and smooth, which is an approach that I think carries the least risk in terms of a strategy to normalize its size. Importantly, though, once that process begins, it should continue without reconsideration at each subsequent FOMC meeting. And by that I mean the process should go on autopilot in some respects and not necessarily vary with moderate movements in the data that will come in. To do otherwise would amount to using that balance sheet as an active tool of policy outside of periods of severe financial or economic stress. And in my view, I think that would increase rather than reduce uncertainty. So given the conditions that we see in the economy today, I support beginning that process of reducing the balance sheet as early as this year. This would further normalize the stance of policy and I think leave more highly liquid and safe securities available to the market, a market where I think it will be increasingly important that the central banks step back and allow markets to price risk and to allocate resources. I do not favor deferring action for the purpose of allowing inflation to overshoot the 2% goal or to press labor markets into a condition where they are overheating. I want to talk about the context for the 2% inflation target that the Federal Reserve adopted back in 2012. Remember at that time, the unfamiliar nature and the unknown consequences of these large-scale asset purchases had piqued concerns in the public and actually more broadly in academic circles about the implications for inflation expectations. And so anchoring those expectations with a more explicit commitment to price stability was appropriate, and I supported that decision. In the years following, however, we've seen inflation run below that stated target, although at times only slightly below, and only recently has it moved to just over 2%. The FOMC talks about the nature of this inflation objective in its annual statement on longer run goals and monetary policy strategy, and says specifically, inflation that persistently deviates, whether it's above or below that 2% objective, of course is cause for concern, but monetary policy need not react necessarily to temporary deviations. And importantly, I do not interpret the strategy as calling for inflation to linger above 2% in order to make up for past shortfalls, but rather that we keep an eye on inflation being stable in the long run without any deliberate overshooting. Continuing highly accommodative policy or adjusting monetary policy in response to modest shortfalls or overshoots from the inflation goal is an attempt, in my view, at monetary fine-tuning. It is often not practical and may ultimately prove costly. So although inflation is running close to 2% today, and most forecasts expect it to remain there, I want to point out that when you look at the components of that inflation, the prices of different goods and services are rising at very different rates. For example, services inflation has been running well above 2%, and housing rents in particular have been playing a key role in moving inflation higher. By several measures, rents are rising faster than aggregate wages. So keeping monetary policy easy to achieve higher inflation has the potential to push those rents still higher, negatively affecting a large percentage of households. And it's for that reason that you will not find me as enthusiastic or encouraged as some when I see inflation moving higher, especially when it's driven by a sector like housing. Inflation is a tax, and those least able to afford it generally suffer the most. This concentration and persistently rising prices in one area, a single area of the economy like housing, suggests that it is struggling to reallocate resources. For housing, it could reflect several factors that we see today. Maybe it's tight lending standards faced by home builders. Maybe it's the scarcity of skilled craftsmen that are needed to construct new homes. I expect the market will eventually solve for that, or at least adapt to factors such as that. But using monetary policy to compensate for those kinds of factors could easily end up making such bottlenecks worse. So overall, I'm encouraged by the start of the normalization process, and I would like to see it continue. I think that will require resisting the temptation to react to near-term fluctuations in the data. And looking ahead, I think we should expect that we're going to see inflation move around that 2% target. A modest decline in inflation or an overshoot doesn't necessarily warrant the monetary policy normalization process to slow or to accelerate. And that, I think, is where we have to be cautious, because attempts at what I call monetary fine-tuning can easily backfire. And so, of course, a more forward-looking view of inflation is needed. That's not uncommon, and it's why economists and policymakers emphasize the importance of inflation expectations. In fact, the FOMC, of course, emphasizes inflation expectations and their importance. In fact, every time we issue a statement, you will find specific mention of those expectations. The important factor, I think, is that the public, the markets, and policymakers see the setting for monetary policy supporting that inflation goal in the long run, rather than expect a policy that tries to keep inflation squarely pinned at 2% under all circumstances. So I'll close by saying, while both the inflation rate and unemployment rate is in range to meet the FOMC's objectives, the federal funds rate is far from its longer run level, and the balance sheet remains large with ongoing reinvestment of maturing securities. Continuing along the path of normalization, even in the face of uncertainty, is necessary if we are to achieve long-run objectives for this economy, including price stability and full employment on a sustained basis. Thank you for your attention this morning.